I'm Chance.
And I'm Sarah Catherine.
And this is Conservation Connection,
presented by Last Chance Endeavors.
We are a husband and wife team running a wildlife education nonprofit. It's focused on connecting students to their environment.
Each week, here on Conservation Connection, we do just that, introducing you to the groundbreaking science and conservation work that's happening every day across the globe.
We talk to professionals in the world of conservation science and wildlife management, and we ask them about their career,
their current projects,
their wild and crazy stories from the field,
and everything in between.
This episode is a collaboration with EarthX here in Dallas, Texas.
EarthX is the largest Earth Day celebration in the world, and it brings in speakers from every corner of the environmental arena.
Listen in to hear the stories of today's environmental titans, covering everything from environmental law, ocean health, renewable energy, clean transportation, and so much more.
Let's get to the show.
Alrighty, guys, welcome to another episode of Conservation Connection. I am incredibly excited to be here at EarthX 2022, sitting across from Vance Martin again, who is the president of Wild Foundation.
Welcome to the show again.
Thanks, you guys. Great to see you.
So last time we spoke with you was in 2019. Yeah. If you're a new listener, we've been to EarthX in 2019. If you scroll back into season one or season two, you'll find Vance's episode. It's a really fantastic one. I highly recommend listening to it. But yeah, we're here. We just want to catch up with you and hear a little bit about what you guys have been up to for the last couple of years.
Well, like everybody, not traveling quite as much.
Which was a big part of what you did.
Oh, well, yeah. No, you know, I had an embarrassing amount of carbon offsets. I don't particularly like offsets, but you got to try to
do something.
Do something, yeah. So, you know, all of our offsets always did and still go to intact forest protection, because we feel that's the number one thing to do, is not plant more trees. I mean, I'm a tree man. I love it. But we have to save the remaining intact forest and grasslands and wetlands. It's good for carbon, good for biodiversity. It's good for the soul.
I like that. I like that a lot. It is good for the soul. Yeah, it's one of those places where, you know, the machinery of nature is still working as it has developed over the last thousand and thousand and thousand years. So it's doing all of those things passively, capturing carbon, filtering the water, making sure that the air is clean, as well as providing habitat for, you know, thousands of species.
Well, you know, it's the new phrase the last few years is it's a nature-based solution. And, you know, you go to the climate COPs and all of that kind of thing. Finally, this year in Glasgow, they finally started talking about the link between biodiversity and climate, you know, because usually the climate stuff is all tech, you know.
And right. How do we, you know, use this technology to sequester carbon?
Yeah. And finally, the nature climate connection is coming together, because biodiversity extinction is part of the same issue as climate, actually.
Absolutely.
And if we use nature-based solutions, it's not only, you know, good to save nature, it's the most cost-effective way to address climate change.
You're not reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So anyhow, that's we've been quite involved in that nature climate work. But we're still really involved with what we call community-led conservation. The term in the professional conservation world is community-based natural resource management. You know, CBNRM, everybody's fond of acronyms. But we spend that because when we work with communities, it's not just based on who they are and what we can give them. It's based on how can we help you? If you want to lead, we're there.
Yeah.
And then gradually you're building that capacity and you're learning yourself, you know, whether that's in West Africa with our work in Mali, which has been incredibly dangerous and success story. Well, the Central Mali Reserve of the Gorma Elephant Reserve, where we work, it's a desert adapted elephants. I think I mentioned that last time. We've been able, our team there, which is all Malian, working with the communities in community-led conservation. Well, after 16 years there, the president just signed a few months ago an expansion of that reserve times 10.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah. So it's one of the larger protected areas in Africa now. Now look, it's Mali. It's a war zone and we still got this done. And look, there's not a lot of rangers running around protecting the wildlife. I mean, you know, I mean, there's, right. It's a very dangerous place, but our team, because they're local people, they got it done.
Yeah.
And it's a real win.
And that's the real value of not just having boots on the ground, but having boots on the ground that are from that ground, right? Yeah. It's the people that live there, that grew up there,
yeah.
that are always going to be intrinsically motivated to care for their hometown, yeah. for their homeland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's essential.
Mm-hmm. So that is one topic that we touched on in our first interview with you mm-hmm. that I did want to dive into a little bit more this time around. The community-led conservation, how does it work? How do you set it up when you're new to a community? I'm sure you're still going into new communities, and I know you have some that have been developed for years now, but how do you do it?
Well, you know, just whether it's in West Africa or Southern Africa, some of our work in the last couple of years, we've begun to refocus on the Amazon and working with, we've always worked with one or two tribes there, but now really focusing on the Yawanawa community in far western Amazon. And I just happen to have known the chief for many, many years. We're real brothers. And so it's easier with him because we know each other. But the principle is always the same. The principle is you listen. Exactly what's going on and what are your needs? And conservation, in our experience, does not work if you're telling people what to do. It works when you're meeting their needs. And if they identify their needs as protecting their homelands, as the Yawanawa do, you know, it's 500,000 acres, 200,000 hectares of intact rainforest. They want to protect it. It's their heritage. Or whether it's in Mali, again, with all the, you know, 13 ethnicities in this huge area. And we listened for 2 years. And we thankfully found out that they wanted to save the desert adapted elephants. And I might have mentioned this last time, but it's really still one of the most wonderful findings in my conservation career was to discover one of their main reasons for wanting to save the elephants was because of their baraka, their spirit. And everything has a unique baraka. And, they always said, if the elephants go, their baraka is gone. And we are all the poorer for it. Lovely, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love to hear, it's a concept that you hear pop up in a lot of different cultures, right? And in the sort of Western scientific world, we call it intrinsic value.
Yeah.
It has value because it exists.
Yeah.
There's it not because it can make us money, not because we can, you know, sell tours. It's valuable. It deserves our effort to save it because it exists.
That's
and
right.
For no other reason than that.
Yeah. And, you know, I need to also say that that's actually one of the things that motivates me the most. And we always have to balance it with practical value.
Of course.
So it's economics. But again, we don't give welfare. It's another thing about community-led conservation. If you're giving a lot of stuff, money, whatever it is, we arrange it so that the people, the community, they earn it. You know, there's a reciprocity always. Because the welfare state conservation doesn't work.
It works only as long as there's a grant to fund it. And then as soon as that funding disappears,
gone.
It's gone.
Gone,
it's
gone, done. Gone.
Right. And yeah. We need long-term yeah. projects.
And then, you know, also the people not only, once they earn it, they own it.
Right.
You know, and right. there's a different type of inherent value. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, because the value of all of your blood, your sweat, your tears that went into it.
It's pride, you know, so, you know, like we employ a lot of young men in the desert of central Mali. But one of the most important things about it is they have a job. They're not going to the jihadists and earning money there. And they have pride within their community. And the elders want them to stay. And that's so important.
Strong community building.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we spoke with someone who works in coral restoration the other day, and it's the same kind of story. Getting that community involved and to care about planting these new coral, restoring this area, restoring a reef, making a new reef, makes them care about it so much more than just being like, oh, yeah, somebody came in and put in some new coral. That's like, that's right. Cool.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. I love that y'all do that.
Well, while we're catching up, are there any other cool initiatives that have happened over the last couple of years that you'd like to bring up?
Well, not too long. Let me see. Getting my dates straight here. Last time we spoke, we were in the stages of planning the 11th World Wilderness Congress, WWCC 11 in India, which was going to be in March of 2020.
Yeah.
It's a rough time to have a conference.
And, you know, I arrived there, you know, a couple of weeks ahead of time, early March. And, you know, within 3 or 4 days, I said, boy, this is not going to happen. You know, and the pandemic hadn't been declared yet, but the writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
So after 2 years of planning and a lot of money, we canceled it. And but we had already put into planning quite a few things that were going to be announced there. And one of those things was the Global Charter for Rewilding the Earth. The principles of why should we rewild and what's the difference between rewilding and restoring? Well, that was great. We launched that, got really good take on it. And suddenly people said, well, we need to bring a lot of the rewilding groups together. And so we really, because of the request, we formed this Global Rewilding Alliance. You know, we're another group here in the States called Rewild was with us there. And Rewilding Europe, Tompkins Conservation in Chile and Argentina, Bush Heritage and others in Australia. So, you know, within a few months, without advertising or asking, we had about 130 groups. Wow. Around the world, there is a lot of rewilding going on. I mean, these groups, and most of them are the big practitioners. They're on every continent except Antarctica, and between them and all of the partners represent 100 million hectares, 250 million acres at least of wow. work. That's, you know, areas that are being restored on land and sea. So that's been big for us. And as we've gotten into it, there's this other really cool thing that we've kind of discovered, the research that was being done on it that hardly any other conservationist knew. And that was on this thing about the value of wildlife in carbon sequestration and how, again, nature can meet climate goals. And so we've been doing a lot of that. It's called animating the carbon cycle. Animating, bringing to life.
Yeah, cool.
You know, it's not just tailpipes and you know, big carbon sucking machines. You know, these are animals, right. And the research is fascinating.
Yeah, and if you're listening and you haven't heard the term carbon sequestration before, right? To sequester is to put away somewhere. So we're talking about trying to find ways to pull this excess carbon dioxide that we've released into our atmosphere by burning fossil fuels, by, you know, powering our homes and our cars with coal and gas and oil, taking that extra carbon dioxide that was released and pulling it out of the atmosphere, putting it into biological organic compounds that keep it from warming our earth any further.
That's right. You know, and so this happens to be about the wildlife, and this is fairly new stuff, but I mean, it's why I was mentioning earlier, protecting intact forest, the large old trees in intact forest are the best carbon storage, much better even than the ones that are fast growing and young. It's actually the old big trees. So what happens when they deforest these areas, you not only lose that ability to store the carbon, all the carbon that's in there is released.
Right.
Boom.
Right.
You get a double whammy. So, yeah.
This is very, very not good.
Yeah. So, but this new wildlife thing is fascinating. I mean, it's from whales to wildebeest to crabs, birds, the frugivorous monkeys. I mean, they have a, you know, if their populations are restored to anywhere near pre-industrial levels, And that doesn't mean 1,000 years ago. You know, it can be just a couple of hundred years ago. Anywhere near that, you gain, we don't want to get too technical here, but as you said, the ability to store carbon that these animals do, whether it's elephants or wildebeest is a great example, that's in the Serengeti. But you increase 4 to 12 times the amount of carbon through how they graze, their feces, you know, and
it turns up into the soil.
It's just an amazing.
Yeah, I sort of think about like the American bison, right? And the massive herds that we had, millions of animals, yeah. And we're all carbon based life forms on this planet. How much carbon, was sequestered in the herds of American bison? It makes a lot of sense that wildlife would be a huge, huge part of that.
Yeah, and you know these. As I say, fructivorous, the fruit-eating monkeys and even the amphibians, you know, they take the seeds and disperse the seeds and create more ability for trees to draw down the carbon. So it's a, you know, nature's there. And
it's working real hard.
It's working real hard. And you know, part of the thing is that we just have to let nature be. And that's the great thing about saving wild nature.
Absolutely. Well, if our listeners wanted to learn more about what you guys are doing, where could we send them?
Well, very simple, wild.org.
That is very simple. And if you can't manage to type that into your URL browser, don't worry. I have it in the show notes. So just scroll on down. You can click on that link and learn more about the programs that wild.org is doing.
Absolutely. And we hope to see you here next year at EarthX and learn more about the future of the Rewilding Alliance and everything you're doing with Wild Foundation.
Thank you all so much for what you're doing and getting the word out there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Conservation Connection.
If you enjoyed our podcast, go ahead and subscribe to make sure you catch every episode that we post.
We'd love to hear from you. So if you want to reach out, go to our website, lastchanceendeavors.com/contact, and shoot us an email.
We love questions from our listeners. So if you heard something that you want to know more about, be sure to let us know.
If you've got a minute to spare, leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts will help other conservation-minded people find the show. We'd really appreciate it.
A big thanks to the people working to protect our planet, and a big thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to tune in next week.